Hi everyone, and welcome to Jerry Talks, the podcast. This month we have with us Mariana Chola, who is the managing director of Endeavor Kenya, and we have Vladimir Dugin, who is a partner at E3 Capital. Both of them are in the VC space, and so we're talking all things VC this month. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Marianne, tell us a bit. First of all, tell us, how did you get into the VC space? Tell us a bit about yourself.
Great. So thanks for having me. So I started off my career as a psychologist. I studied psychology in undergrad. I worked as a psychologist for a bit, and then I discovered it just wasn't me. At that time, Mwai Kibaki had become president, the economy was expanding, banks were hiring, like literally off the street.
Yeah.
So it was a chance encounter with finance. I got in and I was at Barclays, now Absa, for 10 years. And that's where I really saw the power of finance to power businesses. And, you know, going to Career Banking North, working with small manufacturers, working with big corporations, it was amazing to see. But after a decade, I got into impact investing, which is now, for me, it was finance, class plus. So I did that for about 3 years and then ended up at Endeavor. And that's, again, the power of finance, but now for big ideas, which people don't necessarily find when you're coming from a banking background.
Amazing. And Vlad, how did you end up in Kenya?
Yeah, so for me, it was a continuation of my career. I spent all my life in investments and finance, and I actually studied economics for my undergrad. So before coming to Kenya, I spent about 12 years in investment banking, private equity, mostly with focus on Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
And then I just ended up in Kenya for 2 months in 2017. So I was just invited to come to take a look. I was quite impressed by the opportunity in Africa. So many things can be done. And VC was a way to actually develop the ecosystem. So I decided to try myself. Initially, I thought there was not much of a shift from private equity into VC, but actually there was a lot of a shift. So I've grown a lot over this past 5 years being VC.
Amazing. What I want to focus on today is actually like the impact that venture capital can have on promoting innovation in Africa and in Kenya, right? And Endeavor is a huge part of the ecosystem in that regard, and so is E3, but we'll talk about the differences before. But how did Endeavor, first of all, come into this market, and what are Endeavor's aims?
Yeah. So Endeavor seeks to build a community around people that dream really big.
Yeah.
People that think about scale right from the beginning, but people that also understand that the only way we're going to grow an ecosystem is if those people pay it forward. So it sort of becomes a continuum.
Yeah.
And so Endeavor is really about how do you start to build those ethos and how do you build a community around it that supports founders as they, you know, grow this big idea. So it started about 25 years ago in Latin America. So Endeavor in Latin America is a big thing.
Yes, yeah.
It's, you know, it's a big thing. But we started in Kenya 6 years ago. And it was really about getting those initial fast founders and the right ones. Yeah. So Cellulant, think Twiga, think Bebo, and how then that has a regenerative effect. And we now have 16 companies in the portfolio, still maintaining this ethos and still building a community around founders who aspire to be that.
Amazing. And what about E3 then?
Well, we have a specific mandate that's focused on climate. So our first fund was focused on energy access and different solar solutions or productive use of energy. And our second fund is focused on climate tech and any solutions that reduce CO2 emissions. We basically support entrepreneurs who contribute to this ecosystem with different types of solutions. But in a nutshell, our thesis is very simple. Traditional infrastructure in Africa, I mean, it has not been created despite billions invested. So we are trying to back entrepreneurs who are plugging this gap and bringing those solutions that are meant to actually allow people get access to internet, get access to electricity, or just reduce cost of electricity.
Yeah, so yours is impact in that way. The companies that you mentioned, Marianne, are great companies. They're examples of, you know, the top end of venture capital companies in Africa. How did you identify them, first of all, and how then were they able to scale and grow with the help of Endeavor?
So we like to say at Endeavor that these companies were going to scale anyway.
Yeah.
Right? That an entrepreneur who starts to build, who dreams big and starts to build for scale, will do it anyway. So I think for us is how do you shorten that journey? And how do you make sure that, because the entrepreneurial journey can be quite lonely, and entrepreneurs do say that over and over again. How do you make sure that founders are having peers, you know, supporting the people who've experienced these challenges before, and not just locally, but also globally, so that that journey is not as difficult as it would be. So in terms of identification, then we start with who are these founders, and the best way to find them is by getting founders recommend them, because you see your kind when you see them. It's getting members of the community, investors, mentors, refer them to us. So a lot of it is really through the community. And then we take them through a selection process that identifies, looks out for these things all the way to the global international panel before they're able then to join the community and pay it forward as well to the next generation of founders.
So they have to be willing not only to, well, first of all, see the growth that they have the potential of, you know, becoming, and then also become part of the community in terms of helping other companies then, you know, also scale.
Absolutely.
As well. I mean, that's a great model for community building and also just to demonstrate the power of, you know, relationships. In terms of then, you know, the funding itself, how does that funding trickle down to those portfolio companies?
So we think of portfolio support in three buckets. So one of them is access to talent. A lot of founders, as you're scaling, you don't necessarily have the talent that you can afford it, particularly when you're scaling. So we have partnered with global institutions, you know, such as Harvard, Stanford, to have MBA teams come and sort of support founders through specific challenges. And then we also work with companies like Bain, you know, who send externs to work with them. But also we have mentors in our market who've been there, built businesses, contribute their time pro bono. So that's sort of access to talent. The second piece is access to markets. Endeavor is in 41 countries around the world. So if you're scaling and your next target is Pakistan, there's an Endeavor office there. And, you know, so it's, there's a friendly face that you can reach out to. And then the third is access to capital. So that's two ways. One is through building our own community, you know, to include investors and sort of being that matchmaker, you know, who, if you're in clean tech, you probably want to speak to Vlad and, you know, connecting you with investors. But the second is also 10 years ago, we realized we needed to back our own founders. So we set up Endeavor Catalyst, which is a global fund, only invest in Endeavor entrepreneurs. And I think the beauty of it is that LPs in that fund are Endeavor entrepreneurs themselves.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So not all, but like the last fund, a third of them were. Yeah. So that really closes the loop with this value of paying it forward.
Yeah. And it also means that because they are investing themselves, they actually believe in the companies that they're investing in. So what about you, Vlad? Is first of all, how much are your investments in portfolio companies? And how does the money trickle down to them? How do you give them support?
Yeah, it's a very good question. We typically invest, with, at least with this new fund, we will invest from $500,000 to $3 million. That's the initial ticket. And typically it's seed to Series B.
Yeah.
We don't come too early. So the company needs to have some sort of like a proven business model. And some revenues ideally. And then, so what we are trying to do, again, we also backed a few companies where we are the only institutional investor.
Yeah.
And some of the companies from our first portfolio did not exist. So we met, it started just us talking to a few founders. There was not even a company. But the nature of our business is that we don't invest in any fancy hardware or IP, etc. Because, you know, again, energy storage or solar panels, again, it's not really about anything like high tech. It's more about the success depends on execution capabilities of the founders, of the founding team. And execution typically means two things. You need to be able to scale, plus you need to be able to fundraise. And then depending on the nature of entrepreneur, they struggle with one or another. It's very rare when you have like ideal team
who can do both.
Both, yeah. So what we are trying to do, and we back a lot of local entrepreneurs. We like local entrepreneurs. We back entrepreneurs from different frontier markets, Mali, Zimbabwe, Chad. Those entrepreneurs typically know how to execute. They reach profitability sooner than later, I would say. But they scale to fundraise. They don't know how to work with institutional investors. In this case, we just gave them all possible support, from developing all the ESG processes to just getting the right advisors. But in general, when we look at any business, we're trying to see what are the gaps, and then we can plug those gaps. And we have all sort of things in our team, like different venture partners. Mm-hmm. We can bring good tech from or software developers from Eastern Europe. We bring really good advisors for fundraising if you need one, and all sorts of things, including talent. So we also place people from our own networks. And last but not least, sometimes because we've made investments almost in every country in Africa, we have partners from almost everywhere. So if you decided to go, I don't know, to Burkina Faso, and you're from Kenya, we can, in 15 minutes call, we can connect you to the right partner.
I mean, that's great. That's great. Why do you think that VC has got such a hold on the African continent, but also in Kenya specifically? Because the difference between PE and VC is staggering. The statistics are that VC is growing by far bigger. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's a very good question, and we can start with all the PE funds and the PE ecosystem in Africa. There is no deal flow. There is a lack of deal flow. You can look at the deals in Kenya. People are selling hard comfort one to another, Java, etc. So the problem is the deal flow. And the problem is, for many PE funds, once a VC deal reaches their ticket size, it's already overpriced.
Yeah.
So they had no choice to go down to be able to participate in this VC ecosystem as well.
Yeah.
So, and that's why VC is so big, because like a lot of things need to be created from scratch, and you need good entrepreneurs. And that's why everyone is going into VC, including large PE funds. I think almost every big PE shop is going to have a VC arm very soon.
So by deal flow, do you mean that there isn't enough innovation that has happened in the market so that, you know, it's trading between the largest entities for PE? Is that what you mean?
There's just not enough companies to buy or to back.
Yeah, and that's innovation-based, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So your model is, you know, recommendations.
Yeah.
How do we actually promote innovation to get to the heart of where people are actually, you know, creating things that are innovative enough for VC companies to be interested in them?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, because and that's where we take an ecosystem approach, because we do say entrepreneurs are everywhere. Like, you go to the most remote part of this world, you will find an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But opportunity, and in this case, an enabling environment where if you have a good idea, you can develop it to its fullest potential, that opportunity is not everywhere. And that's why we do take an ecosystem approach, because it's not just getting entrepreneurs and talented entrepreneurs. It's getting accessible funding, the right, you know, sort of capital that's designed for those ideas. It's getting enabling policies. And right now there's a lot of, you know, conversations around the finance bill, around, you know, all of these things. And, you know, this is your forte, because it impacts how far some of these ideas can go. And it's also about, you know, talent. You know, are there people that can support these founders as you know, members of staff? So all of this, so academic institutions and how they're meeting the moment, you know, when you talk about tech talent, when you talk about, so it's all of those things combined. And that's why founders need everybody to pull their weight, you know, not just, you know, the founder themselves. But I think there's also an innovation curve. And Africa sort of, you know, We've seen in Nigeria, you know, companies go all the way to exit. You know, you've seen companies like Paystack, you know, but in Kenya, we're still sort of going up that. So it's also a question of time. So I genuinely feel it's both of those things, but we also have to have some patience, because building takes time.
I mean, I completely agree with you. And we have to create an ecosystem where there's an enabling environment for people to find the talent, have the confidence to be able to make those investments, and then, you know, as you've said, exit. But the question that I have for you, Vlad, because you recently closed your fund, and congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Was it tough fundraising?
It was very tough.
It was? Yeah. What was the toughest part?
Well, I think, so we started, we closed 2 weeks ago, and we started fundraising process maybe more than 1 year and a half.
Wow, okay.
And I would say it was really bumpy road. I think for a few moments we thought it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
But then luckily it all got
fixed.
But it was just very stressful because there were always some challenges coming all over. But I think what saved us in the end of the day is that we are quite unique in terms of our portfolio and the way we work with our LPs. So we, for our first fund, we created a lot of co-investment opportunities for our own LPs. And we've managed to go to the places where other funds don't necessarily reach.
Yeah.
As I said, frontier markets like Chad, Mali, Burkina Faso, Zimbabwe, which are quite challenging in terms of doing business. So we managed to back local entrepreneurs there. I think that's what helped us fundraise, and that's what convinced our existing and potential new investors that we can actually execute as a team and we have this unique angle.
I mean, that's great. And congratulations again. I think one of the questions I have for you is, if you're looking for funding and you're raising as you did, the money is coming from external parties or, you know, foreign parties with their own interests, perhaps. Yeah. And that means if you're taking money from them, you have to deliver on their particular interests. Is it tough for us to then say that we're creating innovation or enabling innovation with someone else's agenda? Shouldn't the money come from local sources?
Yeah, in theory. How it should happen. But again, I think most of the funds in Africa are sponsored by DFIs.
Yeah.
And they have their own agenda. So that's the reality we live in. So it's a very tough part to accommodate all the requests. So you try to bundle them and just to make sure you make everyone happy, but at the same time, it's workable and you can actually execute on this. In terms of local funding and local investors, I think a few funds are emerging with local LPs, but it's still a long way to go. And I think what we are trying to do with our fund, we actually were trying to prove that you can generate reasonable commercial returns to convince people and family offices and other local investors to actually invest in this ecosystem
instead
of investing it elsewhere.
Yeah. What about you, Marianne? What are your views on that? Because it's really important that if we're going to say we're promoting innovation, we're not only promoting innovation, but creating an environment for local funding to, you know, become the backer of the innovation that's in their own jurisdiction, in their own countries.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of trends come to mind, which for me are positive signals. So the first one is this increased angel activity, angel investor activity. I mean, this is an asset class that, you know, for a lot of working class Kenyans has not been necessarily understood. People make investments. People put money aside and they buy an apartment and they buy land. But now we are starting to see people putting $1,000, $2,000 in, you know, entrepreneurs. And that for me is a positive signal. Because if you have people taking a chance on you in the beginning and people who understand you, people who are your customer profile, then I think that really puts a stamp of approval on our innovators. The second trend is also seeing some banks as well start to recognize, because I think for banks, it's always, you know, do you have tangible collateral? Yeah, before you can even start a lending conversation. Mm-hmm. But we have had conversations with banks like starting to think about what is the opportunity here in terms of cash flow, in terms of, you know, how can you partner in, you know, either tripartite agreements or things like that, where the opportunity is understood by all actors in a way that, you know, conservative actors like a bank, you know, can come in. I think that's a second opportunity that for me, you know, can still be explored. But as Vlad says, a lot more should be done from a local capital angle. Otherwise, as long as all capital is foreign, then I think there are limitations, you know, to how far capital providers can go in this market.
Yeah. And also just, you know, to say that in doing this podcast, we're trying to say, to advertise the fact that you can be an angel investor. You can, you know, put money where you see there's a potential for innovation.
Yeah.
And we need to promote that really a lot more in this country. The other thing I was going to ask, and this is specifically relevant to you, Vlad, is on the areas of you know, investing, because you've said, you know, you're focused on climate. Innovation does not happen specifically in climate, but is it a problem, or should we be concerned that the investments are in like sexy areas like fintech? Climate change is very hot these days. Instead of just looking at whether there is actually an innovative idea that can scale. Vlad?
Yeah, I think it's potentially an area of concern.
You're just going to agree with everything I say.
well, that's true.
Yeah.
And we do have specific mandates, and also this is because of the nature of the ecosystem.
Would you have been able to raise if you had not said climate? If you had said, you know, we'll just do retail, for example?
This we don't know. Maybe
never,
yes.
We'll never know.
Maybe not, but we had track record in climate. That's why.
Oh, I see.
And that's a very hot topic as well, because it's a problem and it's very important for Africa in particular. And luckily for all of us, all these business models and innovations actually make sense in Africa, make commercial sense. And that's why I think it's going to keep growing.
I mean, there is controversy in terms of whether or not climate in Africa makes sense, because people always argue that, well, you know, that the climate conversation should be happening outside of Africa, seeing as most of the damage was not caused in Africa.
That's for sure.
Agreeing again.
Yes, because it's true. But I think again, in Africa, all this climate solution makes sense. They actually don't need, well, in certain cases they do need subsidies, but in many cases they don't. So for any, like, a good example is commercial industrial solar.
Yeah.
The LCOE, levelized cost of electricity, of solar power in Africa, it's now below what you get from the grid. So it makes a commercial sense, and all we need to do is just to execute. And just to give you an example from our portfolio, so when we started looking at CNI sector, commercial industrial solar sector, it was almost 8 years ago. Again, it seems very obvious, but then you can't really order those panels. And if you take a loan from a bank, the interest is so high that it actually kills all the economics of the project. So we start looking into this financing. Can we actually make it work? And that's how we backed four CNI companies in our first portfolio. And these are actually the winners in our portfolio. There is nothing really super new there, but this has an extreme impact on the overall ecosystem. It allows many commercial and industrial customers all across Africa to be more efficient. In South Africa now, with everything going on there, I mean, this is the only way to survive. With all the power cuts, it has a major impact on the overall ecosystem and allows the economy to actually continue functioning.
Yeah. And is the manufacturing being done here in Africa? Of the panels?
I don't think so. It hasn't happened yet. They looked at a few projects, but I think it didn't go through. So most of the panels, I think, are still coming from China. And I think this will continue for a while. But essentially, we're already seeing like people trying to set up at least assembly facilities for energy storage in different markets. I think it's going to happen later.
I mean, that would really be innovative for Africa, really. Yeah, that's what we want to see. And then what about you, Marianne? What is your view on the sexy areas of investment for VC?
Yeah. I mean, I think we need all of it. Because when you think about the sort of problems that VC-backed companies are solving, it's going to markets where no one, and creating entirely new markets, you know, last mile servicing, whether it's e-commerce, whether it's, you know, solar. So there's so much opportunity. So I think for me, the more the merrier. You know, if we're going to get clean tech investors, fintech, I mean, we need all of it. I don't think we... There's a point in cherry picking.
Yeah.
We just need all of it.
And Endeavor doesn't cherry pick, right?
No. For us, if you're built for scale, right, from the beginning, you're a high growth company, it really doesn't matter what sector. And our portfolio runs all the way, you know, from renewable energy, clean tech, fintech, healthcare. It's all of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you give us examples of the success stories that you've had so that we can, from the beginning to scale? I think you mentioned Cellulant, I think.
Yeah. And every company, really, that's on the portfolio is a success story in their own right.
Yeah.
And I mentioned Cellulant because they were the first Endeavor company in Kenya. Mm-hmm. So at the time, you know, Ken Jaroge and Bolaji, you know, were looking to raise their Series C. And they really, at that point, the concept of fintech wasn't really... understood, you know, you're just doing payments. That's, you know, that's. And so they went to the market and they pitched, you know, to all these investors, as most founders will say, a lot of doors being shut on your face. And so going through the Endeavor process for them and really meeting both local mentors as well as global, you know, mentors in those panels and eventually getting accepted and eventually raising what was the largest fintech deal, you know, at that time.
Yeah.
I think. And seeing how they've gone on to where they are now, you know, across multiple countries in the continent, you know, broadening their offering, I think for us is really what the network and the community is for.
Yeah.
Opening doors for you and connecting you to a global network that then makes it easier for you, you know, to do something you'd have done anyway.
Yeah.
But would have been a lot more harder. Exactly. Yeah.
Can you mention newer companies that you can see in your portfolio that are going to be at the scale that Cellulant has grown?
So our newest company is, they're called Flowcash. They're a payment gateway for, so the founder is Ethiopian. So we're also now looking beyond Kenya into the region because a lot of these economies are also interconnected. So Sirak Morsi is the founder of Flowcash. They service airlines and really enabling payments, you know, into airlines if you're traveling.
Wow.
So they're our newest addition to the portfolio and really looking to work with Sirak to, you know, as on his journey. He's been bootstrapped to date, so looking to scale and support him across that scale journey.
May he be successful.
Oh, yes.
What about you, Vlad? Which companies could you mention apart from the CNI one?
To us, most of our portfolio is energy related somehow. Mm-hmm. So, as I said, we have four CNI companies that are growing at a very fast pace. We have a very interesting company called Mawingu in our portfolio.
Mawingu?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which means cloud in Swahili. they're providing internet and they're using very efficient infrastructure, cost-efficient infrastructure to reach customers in different areas. So they're growing at a very impressive pace and we think it could be like... a real winner in our portfolio.
Okay. And then just for entrepreneurs or founders who are currently struggling, what advice would you give them in terms of what to do, how to present themselves? I think a lot of people can be rough around the edges in terms of knowing how to approach this kind of thing. What advice would you give, Marianne? You've been through these beauty pageants.
I mean, so first to say that it's okay if you don't know. I mean, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And that's why the concept of community, the concept of plugging in, you know, into networks, into becomes super important because there are people who've been through the exact same thing, right, that you've been through. And a lot of people are actually very willing to give their time and to just, you know, help you crack, you know, some of those. So I think one of that is plug in as much as you can. But then also the market is not great right now. I think anybody in the space knows that, you know, it's a challenging time. So it's really to build with discipline right from the beginning, you know, looking for, I think unit economics is sort of the holy grail, you know, try to build a sustainable business, you know, in the beginning, while still thinking, and I know it's a fine balance, how you're thinking about efficiency while thinking about growth at the same time. But I think it's the best businesses that are built out of difficult times, you know, over history, I think have gone on to become, you know, the Amazons and all of these companies were built, you know, during challenging times. So I think it's really, those are the two pieces of advice I would give.
What about you?
I would give two probably advices to entrepreneurs. First is focus on unit economics. Make sure you're profitable. Be reasonable with your OPEX. Try to use, as much local talent as possible. Don't try to build everything on expats. And make sure that you are cost efficient. Unit economics is key. Mm-hmm. And second, and especially this goes specifically to local entrepreneurs, in order to fundraise, you really need to be pushy and aggressive. So don't be shy. Don't be too humble. Push. Call investors, write emails, show up for all the possible events and be aggressive. That's the only way to fundraise.
I mean, that's good. That's great advice, especially if you're hungry, you'll get out there, right?
Yeah.
In terms of the future then, what are you guys looking forward to for 2023 and beyond? Is it going to be all VC? What do you anticipate, especially with this punishing economic environment? Vlad?
Yeah, I think we hope for the best. We see a lot of opportunities in the market. The economic environment is not the best, but market will adjust itself. There is still a lot of potential in East Africa and all across Africa. So we hope there will be more and more climate solutions that will come to the market. And especially, I think electric mobility is going to be big.
Electric mobility, electric vehicles, yeah.
Yeah. So I think this industry has a lot of potential, and there a lot of money is going to be invested into electric mobility in Africa the next few years. So I would recommend everyone to look at this space. And same goes to internet, digital infrastructure. We can see a lot of investments coming into the sector, and I think those entrepreneurs who have good ideas would leverage that.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Marianne?
No, I agree with Vlad. I think these things are cyclical, right? It's a dip, and then it will start to go up again. And the most, resilient, the best ideas ultimately, will come out on top. I think generally a very optimistic view, even amidst what seems like, gloom, is that we're on an onward march. I think it's all onwards. Once the digital opportunity has been opened, you can't put it back. Once the climate conversation has been, you can't put it back. So we're onward.
Yeah.
So I think the question is, how do you stay resilient? How do you stay focused? And so that you emerge on the other side. But I think for Kenya especially, it's where ultimately we will still be one of the top markets for VC and for innovation.
In Africa, right?
Yeah.
I mean, dreams don't have deadlines, so people can continue. Yes. I like the idea of an onward march.
Yeah.
Because it's continuous. Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's never ending. Okay, great. Thank you, guys. It's been a great podcast. Why are you laughing?
No, ended too soon. I was just starting to enjoy the conversation anyway. Love it.
You guys were great. Thank you. But anyway, we do have a final thing that we normally do. So we'll do it with you guys as well. A quick fire round. Just to get to know you. Did you read the questions or not? You did. I'm sure,
yeah.
Marianne, you
yeah, yeah, I did.
No, I didn't. Email is not working.
Yeah, you didn't. So that's good. Quick fire on Marianne herself. Okay. I know that you like to knit. You're a singer. You do choir practice. You're a mother of a 16-year-old.
Yes, 16 and a 12-year-old.
Barely look your age anyway. Quick fire, beach or city holiday?
Beach.
Favorite place to visit?
Oh my God, Zanzibar.
I need to do it in tandem. Otherwise, you'll know what the answers are. Beach or city holiday?
Beach.
Favorite place?
Naivasha.
In the whole world?
Yeah.
Okay. Apple or orange?
Apple.
Orange.
Flat or sparkling?
Sparkling.
It was sparkling.
You get one song to listen to for the rest of your life. What is it?
Hasta mi final by Il Divo.
Oh, that's nice. You?
Marc Anthony, Vivir mi vida.
I've never had that song. Pizza topping of choice?
Pineapples.
I'm a fan. You?
I like this one, right? Napolitana with anchovies.
Anchovies.
Yeah.
Okay. Favorite drink?
Ooh, rosé.
Rosé.
Probably rum.
Rum.
Yeah.
Cuban rum.
Not necessarily, but Latin American. Yeah.
Latin American.
Can I add a later addition?
Yes.
Something I've just discovered.
Okay.
You should definitely try the Kenyan original ciders. They are amazing.
I actually did. And they're an Endeavor company, right?
No, they're not an Endeavor company, but I mean, they're part of the network. But really, try this.
Yeah. I mean, I have tried it. It's actually quite good. And they also have a gin brand. We should be promoting local, exactly.
Maybe you should be taking gin.
Are we allowed to do that?
Yeah.
Much honest conversation.
But you've been great. Thank you so much. You guys have been a great guest. Thank you so much for taking the time. We'll see you guys next month. Bye.
Bye.